Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Dallas, Texas, where we have a beautiful morning, but it was 35 degrees this morning when I woke up, but it's always a good morning when Hugo Chavez loses an election. In fact, not an election, but a referendum. In fact, we have our friend Jorge Gonzalez. We had him on several months ago, and he's in Miami, and we're going to chat with him. Jorge, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess I have a little bit of mixed feelings, but nonetheless, it's good to hear that somebody stood up to him a little bit.
Yeah, well, we spoke several months ago. At the time that we spoke, he was having those they were having some demonstrations, if you remember, in Caracas. But you know, when I went to bed last night, Jorge, he was winning, and when I woke up this morning, he had lost, so I don't know what happened. When I went to bed, it was pretty certain that he had won. So did they have a last-minute rush of votes, or did they get votes from other parts of the country? I cannot figure it out.
I think that, you're right, but it's not clear what happened. But I think there was a last-minute rush. I think a lot of the students waited for the last moment. And I don't know how the votes were counted, whether chronologically or by district or how, but I did hear a lot of news here in Miami. As you know, it's been in the news all over the place, that the students kind of waited for the latest hours to start voting for some reason. In fact, some of them couldn't even get in to vote at the end because they closed the urnas before they got a chance to vote.
So a lot of people voted late. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. But I don't know if that affects. I mean, I'm just speculating because I don't know if that affects how the county went, if they do it by counties or as close, or if they do it, you know, as the votes come in. Or so I couldn't really tell for sure. But I do know that a lot of the students were saying that they were going to vote late.
Well, normally, and you have a lot more experience in this than I do, since you know, I came to the United States when I was a kid, but you lived as an adult in Latin America. But usually what happens in Latin America in elections is that the results from the outlying areas, from the rural areas, sometimes take days. And I thought, even with all the computers and all of that these days, what I was afraid of was that there would be maybe days before all the results from the interior came in. Now, maybe the difference in Venezuela is that so much of it is Caracas, and there aren't that many big cities, well, Maracaibo and so on, but a lot of that was probably done by computers as well.
Yeah, I think they had all the rural areas in pretty early, and they had already counted most of those, which is probably where he got a lot of his votes. So I think that Caracas was coming in later, as people are more prone to stay late, and I'm sure a lot of the districts in Caracas were coming in later. So that may have accounted for the. I mean, there was supposedly a pretty large change from the yes to the no at the late hours. So, but it's interesting that he recognized it, and I'm not clear whether he recognized it or not, but I'm sure somehow he got advice that if he tried to do something that would not take into account that. The fact is, you know, Venezuela is split half and half as far as voting in this under these conditions. Obviously, the conditions are wrong. I mean, it's very difficult to vote when you have that much pressure from the ruling party. I mean, can you imagine in this country if that kind of thing happened, where the ruling party had overwhelming rights to propaganda and so forth, and the minority party had nothing? I mean, in this country, it's totally the opposite. The Democrats have extreme amount of more propaganda at this point in time. I mean, they get free ads all the time from the media, from the mainstream media, and yet they lose. So over there is the other way around. It's Chavez has everything for him in terms of propaganda and information, and yet it's split.
Well, and that's what was surprising to me. I mean, if he lost 51-49, could he have actually lost even bigger? Could this have been one of those cases where, they did everything possible, but they just couldn't. I mean, they couldn't steal it, I guess, because it was just too much. They couldn't do that. But I suspected that it was 51-49 against Chavez. Maybe it was closer to 60-40. And the reason I say that is because, and you're closer, being in Miami, you're closer to the Venezuelan community than us here, but I think all the passion was against Chavez. I mean, it seems to me, when I saw those demonstrations, it seems to me all the passion was against Chavez. Was I wrong?
Well, you're right. In Caracas especially, I mean, you have a tremendous amount of people that are scared to death that they're going to lose their country, basically, you're probably about right in terms of, you got to understand, first of all, he has control of the media. Second of all, he has intimidation tactics. There's a lot of people that abstain even though they want to vote no, simply because they're afraid that somebody's going to find out that they voted no. The effect of intimidation on a voting campaign like this is it cannot be underestimated. If it would have been a totally free vote, everybody allowed to do their views, express them, nobody afraid of being of having represalias or anything like that, I'm sure the vote would have been 70. He does have a certain amount of the population that supports him. The poorest part of the population have never had anything good going for them, so they're willing to try anything to see if their life will change. Obviously, the socialist system does not work, so they never get where they're at until they actually start, until the economists start moving forward and they actually start, working in a certain way. So he has a populist, support. But the fact is, well, one of the other points that I think is very important to keep in mind, in a legal country, in a country where there's real rule of law, in order to change the Constitution, you would have to have a much higher standard than a 50-50. So when people talk about 50-50, he almost won, it's ridiculous. I mean, if you were to change the Constitution in the United States, you have to override a veto. If there's, you have to have a certain majority. I don't remember exactly what it is, but I think it's like 3/4 in order to do amendments.
Yeah, the process is two-thirds of the Congress, and then when it goes to the states, you have to have 3/4 of the states. So, exactly. I mean, the hurdles are very significant in the United States.
So, you can't say you're going to change the whole social structure of a country because half the people want to change, because what happens to the minority of the other half? There's no protection to them. I mean, all of a sudden, 51% of Venezuela decides they want to be communist or socialist, which is the mild term, because in reality it's communism. They decide, and then the other 49% is totally marginated forever. Which it's crazy, but and I don't think the media makes that point enough. They kind of, he almost won. Well, if there was a real rule of law, he wouldn't even be close to,
that's
to
exactly
being able
right.
To being able to change the constitution of the country.
You're exactly right. We're talking to Jorge Gonzalez from Miami. He's a Latin American specialist. We've spoken with Jorge before. I know your time is limited, Jorge. So. Can we have you for a few more minutes? How are you doing?
Yes, I need to go back in about 5 or 10 minutes. But,
okay, great. That's perfect. That's
that
perfect. That will give me a chance to ask you two other questions. Let me, first of all, let me agree 100% with you. It is ridiculous that you would change the Constitution this way. And we use the American example, which is a pretty good example. In the United States, if you want to amend the Constitution, first of all, 2/3 of the Congress has to approve it. Then it goes to the president. He would have to approve it. Then it goes to the states, and 3/4 of the states, that means, 75% of 50 states would have to approve it. So it's very difficult, or it should be very difficult, to change a constitution, and for him to be able to do it on a case like this is ridiculous. So that your point is so well taken. Let me ask you two quick questions. what impact do you think this is going to have with the rest of Latin America? I mean, the voters in Latin America woke up this morning and they heard that Chavez lost. What do you think that's going to have with them all over Latin America?
You know, Chavez has just talking has been his worst enemy, because every time he opens his mouth, he says something that somebody says, where is this guy coming from? I mean, is he completely demented? People are understanding more and more as they watch him talk, as they watch him, you know, show up his ego, because that's what it is. He has an incredible ego, which is probably a result of some kind of complex. I mean, this guy has some mental problems. There's no, I don't think, and most people are beginning to agree with that. I don't think anybody, the types of things that he says, you know, cutting off oil to the United States. I mean, a lot of that goes to his own company. I mean, those are absurdisms that everybody's beginning to see and understand that he claims. So, you know, I think this is just one more step towards making him less and less important in terms of what effect he has on. I mean, people like in Ecuador, Korea, and of course, Evo Morales in Bolivia, those people are so far out of it at this point that they're going to continue being his friend. Of course, Castro is going to continue to show some support for him. Nicaragua is ridiculous. I'm embarrassed to admit that I was born there at this point, with the kind of government that we have. And those are the only countries that are going to really take him seriously at this point. And it had already happened before even this, but now this has been in the news so much, and people have seen him and how he acts and how he talks. You know, he wanted the King of Spain to take off his crown and kiss his hand and apologize. I mean, what person in a normal mind, I mean, for the King of Spain to have gotten upset at an international meeting with the amount of diplomacy that he is accustomed to, the amount of constraint that they're accustomed to, for him to get up and shut him up in a meeting of diplomats, you have to understand how people are just getting fed up with him. I mean,
how
that's
irritating,
a perfect
yeah.
Example.
Yeah, how I mean, irritating just, Hugo Chavez is, right?
He's not, yeah, it's irritation, and it's people, I think he's now completely isolated. I guess the thing that I'm a little bit afraid of on the downside is that somehow this may, the fact that he accepted the no vote might give him a little bit of legitimacy. Some people may say, because they don't understand, first of all, what we just said, he's trying to change the Constitution with 51% of the vote. But also because, you know, yeah, the guy is honest. You know, he accepted the no. He accepted the no for very important reasons. Number one, there's a very strong element in the military that's beginning to get weary and upset with him, and he knows it. The students are a very significant part because they're irreversible. I mean, those guys are, they have the guts, they have the sustained power, they have nothing to lose because they can't pressure them economically. He's tried some things in the university system, but they can't, you know, your students are never going to control. So once you have the leadership of the students, you have some military, particularly his defense minister, having resigned and totally attacking him at this point, you know, he's got to be extremely careful that he's not going to get knocked out at some point. And plus the other obviously important factor is that Venezuelans aren't doing any better. You know, some people, they've gotten some gifts, but eventually the economy is in such a disaster that and the infrastructure is beginning to falter so much that everybody sooner or later is going to realize, you know, we're not any better. We're worse. And
that's
so
right.
I'm hopeful that this guy is going to pass on to history and not become another Fidel.
Well,
you know,
yeah, that's,
I have to deal with him for 50 years.
Yeah, that's. I was talking to my father last night, right, you know, before, because I was visiting my parents last night, and this is before, you know, when we thought he had won. And one of the things that my dad said, you know, the big difference between Venezuela and Cuba, or one of the differences, is that the Cuban people really never got a chance to vote like this or to express themselves like this, because Castro, right after the Bay of Pigs, was able to consolidate his communist power. So maybe there's a little bit more hope for the people of Venezuela that at least they've stood up to him, and now they've shown the world, they've shown themselves, that this man can be defeated, and that's a big thing, you know, when you can show the world and when you can show Chavez that you can, in fact, defeat him. I think that's a major boost for the opposition.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the upsides of this. And I think combined with everything else that has happened lately, and it's going in the right direction. It's reducing his ability to have so much influence. I mean, not just in Latin America, which I think is just reduced, basically has reduced himself to three countries, but also internally in Venezuela, there are people that are beginning to have the ability to oppose him.
Well, Jorge, I know your time is limited, but I want to thank you again for your time today. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on that situation down there. And who knows? It could change in a few days. And if it does, I'd like to check with you again.
All right. Thank you, Silver.
Have a great day. Have a good afternoon.
And my views over here. And,
yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, Jorge.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, that was Jorge Gonzalez, Latin American specialist. He was originally born in Nicaragua, and he came to the United States, well, I guess in the 70s, and well, late 70s, maybe early 80s, and well, he understands the region quite well, and as you can see, he understands what's happening. He's down in Miami, where there's lots and lots of people from Venezuela, obviously, who are probably pretty happy this morning. I mean, I have to admit that I am happy. I'm concerned because I'm not sure, frankly, where this is all going to go. And I'm concerned because I really don't trust Chavez. I have a real problem. Whenever you're dealing with a very irrational person, you never know how that person is going to go. But I think Jorge made an excellent point, two very, very good points that I think we can take away from what we've seen down there in the last 24 hours. The first point is regarding amending the Constitution. And this is, I think, a great civics lesson, and we can thank Jorge for bringing that up. You know, here in the United States, when you're going to school and you know, in grade school or high school or whatever, and you're taking your American history class and you're reading about the Constitution of the United States, they teach you about the amendment process, and they teach you, you know, what you have to go through to amend the Constitution. And of course, in order to amend the Constitution in the United States, first of all, there has to be a two-thirds vote in the Congress, and then of course after that, the Constitution, the proposed constitutional amendment, is sent to the, in this case, the 50 state legislatures, who then have to vote for it. So basically, you have to overcome two hurdles. You got to get two-thirds of the Congress, and then you got to get three-quarters of the states. Now, the reason for those hurdles is that it forces the proponents of the constitutional amendment to have to get a bipartisan, a bipartisan movement. You can't just have Democrats with 51% of the vote or Republicans with 51% of the vote change the Constitution. So it basically requires both sides to come together and have some kind of a bipartisan constitutional amendment, and this is something that I think works well in the interest of the country, because it keeps a lot of these passionate movements, a lot of these things that where people wake up one day and they decide to change the Constitution for the heck of it. It keeps those kinds of things away from ever becoming a constitutional amendment. The other thing that Jorge mentioned, which is, I think, extremely important, is what's happening within the Venezuelan military. The Venezuelan military, I think, is starting to get nervous regarding Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez is the kind of person who could, in an irrational moment, for example, get into a military conflict with one of his neighbors, or if he goes out and buys all these submarines from Russia as he wants to, or if he wakes up one morning and says, you know, I'm going to stop selling oil to the United States. These are all irrational things, and the military doesn't want to be put in a situation where they have to go out and basically carry out one of these irrational mandates. So I think you got to watch the military. They, I think, are becoming nervous. I'm not saying that they don't support Chavez. I think most of them probably do. But they're starting to get nervous, and they're starting to have some concerns regarding the situation with Hugo Chavez. So that's going to be our report on Hugo Chavez, a very significant day in the history of Venezuela. And on Wednesday, I'm hoping that we'll have a conversation with a blogger who lives in Venezuela, one of the bloggers who has been keeping us posted on what's happening down there. And I made contact with him today, and he wasn't able to make it today. But on Wednesday, hopefully, he can give us some time, and we can chat with somebody who was down there, who actually got out and went to vote, who participated in that incredible event in Venezuela, and who will give us that personal viewpoint of the people who were down there. Now, today, I was hoping to have a conversation with someone from the Dallas Morning News regarding an article that came out here in the Dallas Morning News, and it was a very interesting article because it talked about a change in the people movement. Less people are coming to the United States from Mexico. A lot of people in Mexico have apparently concluded that it's just too much hassle coming to the United States, meaning that it's too expensive from the standpoint of coyotes. These coyotes have to charge more money now because there are less and less you might say, windows for them to come in because there's more and more protection or guards or whatever on the border. So when you make it more difficult on the border to get in, then obviously you raise the cost of doing business, if you will, from a coyote standpoint. So they're charging more and more money. So more and more people are simply saying, I cannot afford to pay that kind of money to travel to the United States. The other thing is once they come in, they're having a lot more difficulty staying away from the police because a lot of towns are now starting to enforce immigration laws. And then, of course, you have the situation with jobs where it's becoming more and more difficult for them to get a job. So this is one explanation of the story that we over here are making it more difficult for people to cross the border without papers. The other explanation of the story could very well be that Mexicans are finding it maybe more attractive to stay in Mexico. I don't know. I don't see any evidence of that, meaning the Mexican economy is still underachieving relative to its needs to develop a population or to create sufficient jobs to be able to sustain the Mexican population. So we don't really know if this is a trend or if this is just a blip, a statistical blip. We don't really know. And it may take 5 or 6 more months for us to be able to determine whether or not this is something that is a trend or simply just a blip, you know, these statistical blips that appear on the graph from time to time. Now, today I thought we were going to be chatting also with my friend Jerome from LA. He may be calling in here in a few minutes. So some of the things that we will be talking with him about, I'm very interested in this gun control case that is going to the Supreme Court. This is going to be decided. The Supreme Court is going to be making a major decision next year. It could be right in the middle of the political campaign, which will be, of course, very controversial because gun control is one of those issues that really gets people excited. It's like same-sex marriage. It really gets people to vote. Now, for example, in 2000, many people say that the reason that Al Gore lost Tennessee, the reason that Bill Clinton was not able to deliver his home state of Arkansas, the reason the Democrats lost West Virginia, you know, three small states, but significant states in the sense that if Al Gore had won any of those three states, he would have had the Electoral College. I mean, if Al Gore had won his home state of Tennessee or Arkansas or West Virginia, he would have had the presidency. And one of the reasons that people say that he didn't win these states is because of gun control, that there are many gun owners in those states who were concerned with Al Gore's position on gun control. Also, when you go to states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, I mean, we think of these states and the large cities in these states, but in fact, there are lots of rural areas in these states where gun control is a big issue. Gun control is also a big issue in New England. So, in some of those states up there, even Vermont, which is a very liberal state, gun control is a big deal up there because of the rural population. So, gun control, whatever decision comes out next year regarding gun control, is going to be very controversial, extremely controversial, and I don't know how it's going to go. It's going to be a big battle one way or the other. As I understand, it's probably going to be a 5-4 decision. So it's going to be one of those decisions that is really going to energize one side or the other. So that's one of the things that I really wanted to get into. The other is this whole CNN debate. And, of course, CNN is getting, I mean, they're getting hit by everybody. There was an article in the L.A. Times blasting, in fact, they called the CNN the corrupt news network. Now, I don't agree with that. I don't personally think that CNN is corrupt. I just think in this particular case, they didn't do their homework. They just simply did not do their homework. And had they done their homework, I think they would have understood that this particular general who was there asking the question, I mean, all they had to do was Google his name, and they would have had all kinds of references to the fact that this guy was a partisan on the Clinton campaign. So that's just sloppy. I mean, just sloppy. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't subscribe to the conspiracy thing. I just don't think they did their homework. And they because of that, I think they're having some major headaches. And if they ever do another debate, which I hope they don't, by the way, I hope they never do a YouTube debate. But if they ever do, I think there's going to be all kinds of controversy. Let me say something about these debates, though. I don't have a problem with Democrats asking Republican questions and Republican asking Democrat questions. I think it would be kind of neat to have to have debates where the Democrats get to ask the questions on one hand and the Republicans get to ask the questions, so that, you know, basically we go to the candidates with questions from the other side. I think that would be really good. I mean, I think that would be great. It would probably provides for some very interesting debating or some very interesting questions and answers. But I think it should be up front. And the problem with CNN is not that they put some Democrats in there. You know, that I don't have a problem with that. The problem with the general, though, is that they went out of their way to even ask the general if his question had been answered. I mean, it seems to me that they went out of their way to promote the general, and then they found out that the general was an operative in the Hillary Clinton campaign. So that, I think that to me was just a case of performance, not so much corruption. I just, you know, they just blew it. I just don't know what else to say about it. Now, the one thing also that is interesting that is going on, and I just heard about this morning, is this incredible dispute, this little, I don't know, family feud, you might want to call it that way, within the Democratic Party between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. You've got Hillary Clinton accusing Obama of something having to do with money. I don't have all the information, but I mean, this thing is getting ugly between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and I don't know what it means, but I suspect that it means that Hillary Clinton is starting to look at some of these polls, and some of these polls are not looking as good for her, for Hillary Clinton in Iowa. Now, I tend to discount Iowa because Iowa really doesn't tell you a heck of a lot about presidential politics. I mean, if you remember, with the exception of Jimmy Carter, I don't know of any other person. I think George Bush did win Iowa in 2000, but that was fairly predictable. I don't think that was a major thing. But Iowa, I think Iowa gets a little bit too much attention, and we overestimate, over-explain exactly what Iowa is and so on. So I don't. If Hillary Clinton was to lose Iowa, I don't think that's a big deal for her. I mean, you don't want to lose anything, but I don't think that's the end of the world. But it could hurt Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire, which in this case, I think it comes like a week later. So, you know, that could really get Obama all pumped up, or his supporters all pumped up. And I will tell you one last thought here about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I remember going through the 1976 presidential campaign between, at the time, Governor Reagan and President Ford. And Governor Reagan, of course, Governor Ronald Reagan, challenged President Ford for the nomination in 1976. And I remember watching that particular convention on TV because I was supporting Governor Ronald Reagan. I supported President Ford after the nomination and worked very hard for his election. But in the primaries, I supported Governor Reagan. And I remember that night, the very last night when President Ford gave the acceptance speech, that Governor Reagan came down and he spoke to the crowd. And I remember many people after that saying, many delegates, many of the pundits saying, the passion in those delegates, the passion was with Governor Reagan, not President Ford. And the same thing happened, by the way, in 1980, when Jimmy Carter was renominated, President Carter was renominated by the Democrats, and the passion on the floor was not with President Carter, it was with Senator Ted Kennedy, who had challenged Jimmy Carter in the primaries. And I think the same thing is going to happen this year if the Democrats nominate Hillary Clinton. I think what's going to happen is that the passion on that floor is going to be with Barack Obama. He's going to be the choice of a lot of people, and they're going to nominate Hillary Clinton because they think she's more electable. I'm not sure about that. But I think I really believe that if you talk to the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, if you talk to the liberals, they clearly like Obama. And frankly, Obama is a very likable person. I mean, I would not vote for him for president, but I think Obama is a liberal that I can live with because I think he's basically an honest guy. I think Obama is an honest guy, and I think Obama is someone who could grow in the presidency if he were to win the presidency. I think he could grow and learn in the office, so I don't think he would be as bad as perhaps some conservatives think he will. I think he'll be a lot more willing to negotiate and compromise, and he would be a fresh face. And this is something I really believe the Democrats need. They need a fresh face. They really need to break away from the Clintons. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a Democrat. If you're a Democrat and you're listening to the show, my friends, the Democratic Party needs a fast break from the Clintons. The Clintons have not been good for the Democratic Party, and the last thing you want to do is have Hillary Clinton running for president next summer and next fall with all her different positions on everything. One thing about Obama is you know where he stands. You may disagree or agree with him, but you know where he stands, and I don't think Obama is going to start changing his positions just to get elected president of the United States. I just don't see that that kind of person in Barack Obama. But anyway, I'm going to wrap it up for Monday, December 3rd. We're going to see what happened with our friend Jerome. Maybe we can get him on some other time. I was hoping to chat with him a little bit about a couple of these issues like gun control and this situation with CNN, but apparently he couldn't join us today. But we do want to say thank you again to Jorge Gonzalez for talking to us about the situation down in Venezuela, which is, again, a historic day for the people of Venezuela, that they got up and they went out to vote in huge numbers and had an impact on their country. For Wednesday, I think we'll be talking about this immigration issue a little bit more. Hopefully we'll have the opportunity to talk to one of the bloggers down in Venezuela, and, of course, maybe our friend Jerome will call us and we'll have a chance to talk with him and go around the table on some issues. This is Silvio Canto signing off from Dallas, Texas, Monday, December 3rd. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you the next time. Bye-bye.